But I think everybody has music inside of them to some degree. And I think many people can find joy in experimenting and playing with musical things. And I think that's really what Sonic Pi is trying to be, is as a tool for that experimentation and play.
Welcome to Kids Lab, a podcast for parents, educators, and everybody interested in STEAM education. In this episode, I'm talking to Dr. Sam Aron, the creator of Sonic Pi. Sonic Pi is a code-based music creation and performance tool. Sam is the creator of Sonic Pi, and also an educator, musician, and was previously also a researcher at the University of Cambridge in the UK. He has created and contributed to an impressive array of open source projects. Just one of them is Sonic Pi, which we're focusing on for this episode. Sonic Pi is an essential part of the so-called live coding music scene and was originally built and designed specifically for education. The fact that it's now an important part of the live coding scene plays a huge role for education too, as many of the children in workshops or at schools will find it super inspiring and motivational to know that some of the top artists in this genre are making use of Sonic Pi. In the show notes, I'll put a link to the recent article of New York Times that describes this fascinating development of the music scene. So let's now take a look at Sonic Pi. It's a software that is available for all major operating systems, Mac, Windows, Linux. You can also run Sonic Pi very easily on Raspbian, which is the most widely used OS for the low-cost Raspberry Pi. The Sonic Pi website explains the key benefits very well. First, it's simple enough for computing and music lessons. Next, it's powerful enough for professional musicians. It's also free to download with a friendly tutorial, and there's a diverse community of over 1.5 million live coders. Here's a quick practical description of how Sonic Pi works. After opening the program, you add and modify code in the large editor screen. Once you hit run, that code which creates music is run and you get immediate feedback for your creation. You'll now modify and enhance your code and learn about the specific functions to play and modify sound while having a lot of fun. Last thing to note for this quick intro to Sonic Pi is the excellent tutorial. It's not only up to date, but also integrated very well into the Sonic Pi application, which makes first steps very easy. Sonic Pi is coding and music education, something I wish I had when I was young. How did your music lessons look like? Lots of good reasons to visit kidslab.dev for the show notes. I'll add some of the most interesting live music coding sessions to the links, as well as a few cool shots from workshops. And of course, all the links mentioned during the interview as well. Welcome, Sam. Happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm really good, thank you.
Awesome. It's great to talk to someone despite all the corona craziness, actually.
Yes, it's nice to have different voices. Although, actually, I'm finding I'm talking to more people than I've done in a long time because of all of this video conferencing that it's taken off really quite badly.
That's totally correct. Yeah, I agree with that. So, Sam, for the intro, I was looking into Sonic Pi, of course. I installed it on my Mac, but still, I would find it super valuable, even though I quickly described it in the intro, if you could describe it in your own words, like from the creator of Sonic Pi, please.
Sure. I mean, how I would describe it would really depend on who I'm talking to, but in a general sense, it's a free software application that runs on the Windows, runs on Mac, runs on Linux, and runs on the Raspberry Pi that allows you to turn code into music. And you can use that as a tool to teach programming. So you can do basic programming techniques and algorithms and data structures and see how they directly map onto music. But it's also a tool to explore new music making processes. So there are professional musicians who are using this to do new innovative ways of producing music and performing with music.
Did you originally came up with the idea of creating something specifically for education, or was the idea to create like a professional sound music creation tool?
So I've been working with live coding systems for many years now. And I've been doing them for a variety of reasons. The original sort of interest and the main interest for me is the exploration of programming languages as an interface for expression. But Sonic Pi specifically was created for the education space. That was its original remit. And once it had started to do well in that space, I found it very interesting also for the purposes of education is that it's not just to be able to have a tool that can teach something. I think it's also really important to have a tool that can motivate and excite and incentivize people to do that thing. And so just like a piano is a really open and simple instrument to start playing, you can play any of the notes. The real reasons why people play pianos is there are inspirational figures out there who play piano beautifully, and they provide that real sort of inspiration to get started. So I wanted Sonic Pi not just to be something that was simple to use in the classroom, but also if a professional can do amazing things with it, then that would provide that motivation for people to start in the first place.
So you just mentioned it was created specifically for education, and I'm wondering how did that influence some of the decisions you had to make as a software author, basically, as someone who's creating this app. So, for example, the choice of Ruby as a programming language or integrating tutorial. Has this been a conscious decision because you wanted to make this for education?
Absolutely. Working specifically for education has revolutionized the way I think about programming and my approach to software design in general. And this is something I talk about at keynotes to software development conferences and trying to get them to understand the benefits of finding ways to make your software and your architecture and your design and your interface something simple enough that a 10-year-old child could operate. I mean, obviously for me, that was a requirement to be able to have it to be workable in the classroom. I mean, if a 10-year-old child can't use it and you've got a bunch of 10-year-old kids, then that's totally not usable in the classroom. But a lot of the design decisions I'd put into Sonic Pi specifically to target that situation turned out to be wonderfully useful for a variety of other situations, which has been really opened my eyes in many ways.
Yeah, I think that's great to hear that if you're actually prepping something or specializing in kids, that it actually has also lots of other uses and it is beneficial for the greater population, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just like an example, which is a quite funny one. Like I use Sonic Pi obviously not currently, but I have been using it in nightclubs and music festivals where I'm standing there programming in front of a large audience. And it's often late at night and I'm tired. Maybe I've traveled a long way to get to that place. It's in a different country. And so I really don't want to have a complicated system to use. It needs to be simple. And also when things go wrong, I need to be able to fix them really quickly because I don't have 10 minutes to debug something in front of an audience. I have 10 seconds. And actually, it turns out that the ideas and the thoughts I'd put into Sonic Pi to make it easy for a teacher who doesn't really have any Sonic Pi experience, or maybe doesn't even have much programming experience. A lot of computer science teachers today who are really interested and excited and open-minded, but don't necessarily have a computer science degree. For those people, it needs to be simple for them to be able to stand confidently behind a student and know that when something goes wrong, they have a good chance of being able to fix it with them. And so all the design decisions I made to facilitate that and to help that situation turned out to be really helpful for performers too.
Very cool. So you just mentioned live coding already, but let's start with getting with the basics and how to get into Sonic Pi. How would you recommend to get started with Sonic Pi?
It really depends on what you're trying to do with it. So if you're an individual who's just trying to play with it, then maybe you'd have a different approach. If you're an educator trying to learn how to use it to teach in the classroom, maybe different if you're a music studio producer who wants to use it with your existing tools. In essence, really, just download it. It's an app. It looks like a Word document when you open it, which might seem a bit scary, but really it's if you look at a scientific calculator, they're really scary because they've got all the buttons and all the crazy math symbols that maybe you don't know about, cos and sine and tan H and all this stuff, all there exposed. Or similarly, if you look at a modern synthesizer, you have 30, 40 knobs with all sorts of crazy cryptic words like cutoff and low pass filter and resonance. That level of complexity is inside Sonic Pi, but you only reveals itself when you need it. So when you start, you can just use really simple words, and those simple words can make simple sounds. And then as you need to do more complex sounds or complex rhythms or melodies or complex production structures like reverbs or distortions or kind of guitar effects pedals, then you need to use more words. So it really depends on the complexity of the musical output that you would like. So if you want to keep things simple, It's really simple. And if you want to make things complicated, you can do that as well. You just need more words.
And I also noticed, just by the way, when you open the app, right, there's a sample script in there already, a sample Ruby script, and you hit play and it does something and you can start to modify that actually, right? So
yeah, there's a bunch of examples you can load up really easily. I mean, the simplest program you can write in Sonic Pi is one line of code. And that's either play in a number, and that number is how high or low you want a note. So a high number is like boop, and a low number is boop. or you can write the word sample, and there's a bunch of pre-recorded sounds with names. And you can choose one of those, and it will play a pre-recorded sound that someone's recorded with a microphone. So that could be the sound of a whooshing sound, or it could be the sound of a piano or a guitar, or the sound of some drums. But each of those things is just one line of code. And then if you want to do multiple things, you just write multiple lines. And if you want to spread them out through time, then you need one more command, which is the sleep command. So you essentially tell the computer to do something, sleep for a second, then do something else, sleep for 2 seconds, do something else, sleep for half a second, do something else. And that approach, you can, with the play and the sleep, where play lets you play a different note and sleep lets you wait a different amount of time between the next note, you could actually have access to pretty much all of Western music. You can make any melody you've ever heard with just those two commands. So that's, if you're just getting started and you want to experiment, play and sleep is all you need to get started. And I've seen people as young as 6 write 100 lines of code in their first time working with a programming environment.
That was excellent to get started. But what if we want to become masters of Sonic Pi? I think there are 2 big buckets, right? You have to learn about music and you also have to learn about coding in this case. So let's maybe start with the music bucket. What are the important concepts that you need to understand? I think you mentioned play, for example, and sample, right? There's like the panning, cutoff, and stuff like that. So what is a good recommendation for you from you to get started with the music bucket here?
When I met musicians who've studied music all their lives, and they've gone to university and conservatoires, and I've had a number of people tell me they wish they had a way of forgetting all of their music theory because it gets in their way. And I'm not sure that's the case for everybody, but I think it's actually an interesting point. So I think this idea that you need a large amount of theory or existing knowledge to get started is a bad one. Actually, I think that you use the word play, but I'm going to use a sort of a different overloaded meaning. I think the most important thing is to have an open mind and to have experimentation and just be prepared to make all sorts of funny, weird sounds, not to try and focus on making something amazing, just experiment. Because after a while of just making really weird sounds and little ditties and little melodies, you might find you stumble across something which sounds great to you. And at that point, you can just save that code as a text file and you can recall it and play with it. So I think experimentation and an open mind and a preparedness to sit through some strange sounds is really, I think, the most important thing.
When I listen to you, actually, I just I'm reminded of how my music education looked like, and it was pretty terrible, really. So I mean, just it's really heartwarming to listen to you, because if I would have had Sonic Pi in my former school life, it would have probably turned me into a musician, probably. So
I think that's an interesting point. I think that I hear all the time people say to me, "Sam, I am not a musician. I'm not musical," and I can if you sort of prefix, "I am not a professional musician," I can agree with that. You know, and most people are probably not going to become professional musicians. But I think everybody has music inside of them to some degree. And I think many people can find joy in experimenting and playing with musical things. And I think that's really what Sonic Pi is trying to be, is a tool for that experimentation and play. And it uses that exact approach to engage children in the classroom, because they just do tinker and they do play. And if you give the children in their first lesson a 10-minute quick whiz through play, sleep, and sample, like I just explained, and show them on the whiteboard and do some demonstrations, and then say for the rest of the lesson, "Have a go," you'll be surprised by the fact that every child will come up with a completely different piece of music. And that's the exciting thing. Yeah. And then the second thing would be to If you want to make a bit more structured music, Western structured music, that is to go online and download sample packs. So these are folders of pre-recorded samples of drum beats or bass riffs or synth leads or guitars or singing. And there's many of them that are available for free. And download a pack of WAV files of the style of music that you like and then work with those. That will jumpstart you to something, a really interesting place very, very quickly.
And we will definitely put that into the show notes, right? So all these links that you're, all the things you're talking about, of course, we'll trying to have links in the show notes here. And then the second bucket was coding, right? And I almost get the feeling that maybe coding is less important here. And will you maybe automatically pick up the ifs and else and loops in this case?
I believe so. I mean, I've observed that in many cases. I've seen children do nested conditionals and they've not been taught those, which means you put a conditional inside of a conditional. Just because musically, that was the question they were asking. How do I do this? And it just, the musical question, how do I do this musically, drove them to that sort of algorithmic solution naturally. And so I think that as you get more thoughts about, I wish I could do this, then that's when the algorithms and the data structures just slip themselves in as a way to solve those musical needs. And I think that's, even in a computer science lesson, that's how I would always approach it, is not to teach computer science. Well, in the very early days, when I worked with teachers, we did try to do lessons on variables and try to do lessons on conditionals, like the curriculum was sort of seemed to suggest might be an approach, but they fell on their faces completely. And really what we discovered was that, what seemed to be the case, I've not really done any direct research myself, and I'm sure there are interesting papers to read about this, but my experience was that if you packaged the computer science in an actual thing which was meaningful for the individual, then it just sort of taught themselves. So instead of teaching lists of numbers, teach bass riffs, which are just lists of notes.
Yeah, I think you just did bring up a super valid point, actually, that coding is not here for coding, right? And in this case, the main purpose of doing all this is, of course, creating music, right? And once you want to create music and the kids are inspired to do it, then they will automatically learn coding this way too.
If we start to see code as a medium or a thing that we can manipulate, like clay or Lego, there are people who, like, let's just look at the guitar. There are people who are super fascinated about how guitars are made and what kinds of wood you might use and what kind of shapes produce the best sound and how far should the strings sit above the fretboard. People are really, really interested and geeky about guitars, but that's not all guitarists and that's not all people who listen to guitars. And I think the same is true of programming. There are people who really, like me, love how programming languages are made and what it means to be a programming language, and love things like binary arithmetic and sorting algorithms and complexities of algorithms. But I think that those things in themselves is only interesting to the kinds of people who want to study the thing itself. Whereas with, say, like clay or paints, you can do the same. You can really study how color pigments are made and which compounds make the best yellow, for example. But also you might want to think about how you might draw. What is it you would like to draw? What is it you would like to paint? Is it a flower? Is it a tree? Is it a person? Is it something mystical? And it's those questions, I think, which are going to attract the broader audience and engage more people. And I think we need to ask questions about what education's for. And I think that in computer science, a lot of the things I've seen are very, not necessarily explicitly intended, but I think their byproduct is they tend to attract the kinds of people that are already doing programming. And I think actually we already have diversity issues in programming, substantial ones. And we want to be finding ways to broaden the people and sets of people and kinds of people across all cultural backgrounds and across all genders, finding ways to get them to be interested in programming. And I think that sorting algorithms and data structures themselves are probably not that approach, but something which is much more culturally resonant, like music, I think is a much more interesting and attractive way of getting people excited.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think we've stepped into the classroom now. So I wanted to have a couple of questions around the classroom and usage of Sonic Pi in the classroom. So, and let's probably begin with the teachers. How would a teacher best possibly get into Sonic Pi? I mean, are there some tutorials that are available? And are you aware of actually schools and teachers starting to adopt Sonic Pi, for example?
Yes. The answer. So, what I would suggest for a teacher is to download it themselves and to work through the tutorial. It's built into the application itself. It's also mirrored on the website if that's more convenient for you to read. That was written assuming you know nothing about programming or music. So you can learn a bit about both, that way. And I really recommend that teachers spend some time doing that themselves before they go in the classroom, because the way that the approach I typically take, and I've seen used to great advantage, is to have a lesson structured in a way that the first section of the lesson, a small section at the beginning, is sort of is scaffolding the concept you like to teach. Maybe that's like a sequencing or conditionals. And you do that by explaining the concept with a little bit of code, showing them how that manifests itself in Sonic Pi. And then for the rest of the lesson, let them experiment themselves in a free form way. And then walk around and then help individuals. And what you'll find is that the people I said before will diverge very quickly. And that's really good. It has a number of advantages. One is that people can explore their learning at their own pace, which means that they're not held back by others who are perhaps not getting that specific concept that day as quickly as others. Others will have different ideas. And so Sonic Pi has also been structured in a way that you can slip in additional thoughts and additional ideas that are interesting to people without affecting the whole classroom. So you can sort of nudge and say, hey, because it might say this is great, but it doesn't sound very good, you know, and maybe the how to change the sound isn't the core part of that lesson, but you can see that particular individual has got that core part of lesson already, that you can see the evidence of that. So you can, instead of saying, well, you just got to wait for everybody else, you can say, hey, this is how you can make the sound sound better. This is how you can change the reverb or change the synthesizer, or have you tried changing that? And those kind of ideas only come when you've got a little bit more experience. And then, yeah, to recognize that you are learning as much as the student is learning, and to be happy with that situation. So we have a lot of support as well for educators. We have a really nice forums. So when a student or a learner asks a question that you don't know the answer to, so I really recommend you say, I don't know the answer to that, but I will find out. And next week I'll come back with you with an answer. And then go on the forums, ask a question, and we'll all help out and make sure that everybody understands this and we all learn as a community.
In terms of hardware, I see a computer, and probably a really valuable asset is headphones. Is that correct?
Sonic Pi was designed for very low-powered computers. So it runs on something called SuperCollider, a synthesizer, which was designed many, many years ago for hardware of then. So it works really well on all modern computers. So having a very fast computer doesn't really give you much more advantage unless you want to be doing lots and lots and lots and lots of things at once. But what does make a dramatic impact, especially in the classroom, is the quality of the speakers or the headphones. Mm-hmm. So what I tend to recommend is if you have a budget and you're buying things, spend all of your budget on headphones. And then also, if you can, buy a really decent sounding portable speaker. Because when you're walking around the classroom and they're all doing their interesting different music, you might want to then ask the individual, could I play your music to the rest of the classroom? Plug in the speaker, play it to the rest of the classroom, and you'll be surprised by the number of reactions, positive reactions, like, wow, I realized you could make that sound. And then you could say to them, go and ask them, go and have a look at their code, try and figure out what they've done, and take the bits you like and merge it in with your own piece. So using the – and if – when I've seen it play back on poor quality speakers, because many schools don't really haven't invested on speakers with fat bass. It's not really part of the core sort of like tech budget. And so when I've come into that school with my own good quality speakers, there's been a dramatic difference in engagement and interest. I think that having a big speaker system makes a big difference to the engagement.
Very cool. Those are great insights. Thank you so much. So visual coding, it's been a big topic in education. So block-based coding for learning to code. Just look at the BBC Microbit, for example, right? Microsoft MakeCode. Are there some plans to add visual coding to the normal text-based Ruby coding in Sonic Pi?
That's a very good question. I mean, I think that block-based coding is amazing. I think that it's underestimated. I think it's certainly underestimated in industry. I think a lot of industry programmers look at it as a sort of a tool just for education. When actually, in fact, I think it's that, yeah, it's much more than that. In fact, one of the most powerful programming languages we have today is a language called Lisp. It's a family of languages called Lisp. And block-based languages are Lisps, but with pictures rather than brackets. And actually, that's if you're a programmer, that might make some sense to you. But they really are very powerful. And I think they're going to have a dramatic impact in programming of all kinds, not just in education. And in respect to Sonic Pi, I'd absolutely love to see a more block-based approach. It's just a matter of funding, of time, and development. So really, I am mostly an individual working on the project with support from the community in terms of donations in kind, where people have spent some time of their own personal time to add features and to add documentation, which is amazing. But yeah, I don't really have the resources to do something like a microbit editor. I don't have the resources of Microsoft and BBC and et cetera.
Well, now you're touching on an important topic, actually, we could talk next about. So when it comes to supporting the development of Sonic Pi, I mean, I think you're going on gigs, basically, you're playing in clubs, right? But then you also, I don't know, how are you making money based on how we can support you in creating Sonic Pi going forward?
That's a really good question. I think it's an interesting question for open source development in general. When you're making a software product of any kind and you're giving it away for free, how do you make money from it? And you see a lot of, for example, Python is a very well-known open source software system. It's a language, but it really is a project which is open source. And that really is mainly funded from large organizations paying for the main principal developers to develop that language. So often you'll see large organizations support either directly by hiring or through donations through an individual. And that's how Sonic Pi got started. It was incubated with the University of Cambridge in the computer laboratory with donations from a number of organizations, including the Raspberry Pi Foundation and from individual donors, the Broadcom Foundation and Nesta, etc., which was wonderful. But since all that money has sort of disappeared, I've really been finding ways to actually because I really wanted to continue. I didn't want to stop. So it's like, how do I continue this? And so I have set up my own company, and I bring in income from that company from two main sources currently. Although I think the secret to success, really, and certainly long-term success, is a diversity of these income streams. So making sure that the money comes from a wide variety of places. If you have all the money coming from a single source, and that source dries up, that can be a really disastrous situation. So currently I have income coming from Patreon. So these are individuals who donate $1 or $5 or $10 a month. And that sort of constitutes about half my current income. And there's also GitHub do a similar kind of thing now, and that's starting to grow. And then also, as you say, when I do performances or talks, and typically these are at technical conferences, and I deliver workshops and performances and talks, and also company parties, I'll charge money for those events, and that money then becomes income to support software. So when an organization says, can you deliver a keynote? I say, yes, but I have to charge because I give the software away for free. Can you pay for my time? Then I'll use that money to then continue to develop and support Sonic Pi. And that's worked for the last couple of years.
Cool. So we can book you.
Yes, absolutely. But I mean, like last week, and in this new situation where we're doing streaming, I mean, I developed at home a space, because obviously I lost my office when I left the university. So I built an office in my garden and designed it in such a way that I could use it for software development, but also performance practice, because I wanted to try and improve the way I do these performances and also start to think about how I can create streams and create video content for teaching. And so I bought all this sort of camera stuff and video conferencing stuff, thinking this is what I was planning to do over the next few years, is to learn how to do this. And suddenly, today, we're in the situation where it's absolutely essential. And I'm finding it's very interesting that actually a lot of conferences now are moving to a streamed-based approach. And that's making their audiences far larger than they ever were. So last week, I did a performance for GitHub. which was watched by over 9,000 people, which is amazing.
Wow.
So I'm talking to other organizations now. Next week I have one which has significantly higher potential viewership, which I'm really excited about. And so I'm just seeing more of this. I think that's a really interesting space to be in as well. And when you're performing with code, the nice thing is that you can project the code as part of your performance. So it's not just, hey, there's a guy or a person making a music in an interesting way. You can actually start to understand how that music is created. And if you can read SonicPy code, you can see my performances and have a much more in-depth understanding of what I'm doing.
Very cool. And we'll have your Twitter handle, of course, and everything you do in the show notes, so people will be able to follow you and actually get some notifications when you go live. And now we already talk. I mean, this interview is flowing like crazy. It's amazing. We're talking about the live coding music scene already, right?
So yes.
And I want to talk about that, not just because it is cool in itself and it might be super important for you, maybe also as a source of income or something like that, but I think it must be totally amazing and motivating for kids to know that they're working with a piece of software that is actually has a big impact on the music scene these days. So what do you have to say? How did the live coding music scene develop, and what role does SonicPy play in there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, so people have been making music with computers since computers were created, pretty much. In fact, Ada Lovelace, she imagined when she saw Babbage's and her engine, that there'd been just basically a lot of cogs and wheels and dials spinning around. She looked at that and she imagined that in the future, systems would be able to be like that, evolving from that, would be able to make music of all kinds of complexities. So this idea of combining computers and music is not new at all. It's been happening since the inception of computers. But what has changed is the accessibility of it, how it's much easier now to actually get started than it ever was before, both in terms of a cost of hardware. Obviously in the 50s, when people were getting computers to sing Daisy Daisy, they were on computers which only one city could afford. You know, it's incredibly expensive. Today, we have much, much cheaper machines to work with. So, and also the cost of the software and also how easy it is to learn. I think those have all changed. In terms of the live coding scene, there are many individuals, many artists, often people who have got backgrounds in academia and music or academia and computer science, taking their understanding and as far as they can and combining these things. And so there are a variety of different tools and languages for exploration of doing performance with code in a sort of a musical setting, and also to do visuals and to move robots and all sorts of really amazing creative pursuits you can use code to drive. So SonicPy sits in there, and what it does is it really tries to say that it tries to look at it and look at what people are doing and figure out which parts of those are can be simplified enough for a 10-year-old child, and then spend the time to really think about that and then distill it down, put it inside SonicPy to make it more accessible. So it doesn't really necessarily try and do the most radical, new, forward-thinking ideas. What it tries to do is to try and take the ones which are simplifiable and make them accessible to as many people as possible. And accessibility is really a critical thing. So many of these live coding languages don't have their own editor, for example. You have to build them yourself and compile things, install things, and it can take a long time. SonicPy is a single app. But also having your own editor means that you can do things like work with screen readers. And so the latest SonicPy now has support for screen readers. So we have a number of people from the blind communities who are using SonicPy to make music, which is just amazing. And do things like have high contrast color schemes so people with low vision can actually start to work with the system. So yeah, so accessibility really is a critical thing for SonicPy relative to, say, other live coding systems and languages. And then I think that going back to your motivational point, if you were to learn a guitar, then the chances of you being successful on a large sort of large scale way are very small. I mean, because there's so just purely because there are so many other people who play the guitar, like the contention is incredible. Whereas like me doing strange things with code on a musical gig in America got into the Rolling Stone magazine, you know, and I was actually talked about in the same paragraph as Grimes. Wow. Which is nuts. Yeah. And then 2 years later, I performed at the Royal Albert Hall with 1,000 children, all making music with traditional instruments as well as code. I had a quartet of live coders. And so I think that when you're using new kinds of tools like live code, it really jumpstarts you and puts you in a really interesting position. And the way to think about that is that if your school has a talent competition where you have basically lots of bands playing the same covers, if you were to enter that competition and have a quartet or just yourself, solo performance, doing code and music, I think you've got a much higher chance of being successful in that competition than the same sort of guitar, singer, bass, drums combination.
I couldn't agree more. So, Sam, is there anything coming up that you would like to share? I mean, you mentioned a couple of live gigs, for example. Maybe are there some new features coming? Well, anything you like, really.
So in terms of the future, I mean, what I've been working on the last 2 years really has not been Sonic Pi itself as an app. It's really been the sustainability of the ecosystem and trying to find a way to make sure that I'm in a position to continue to develop it. I found myself in that position, which was wonderful. And then we had this whole virus situation hit, and then half my income just disappeared because they were all in-person gigs. So I'm now back reinventing myself and trying to be a streaming artist. But I did manage to get releases out, which consolidated where we were, added accessibility support, which is really important to me. But going forwards, I'm looking at two main things, really. One is distributed performances, so that you're able to start to actually jam with other people around the world using the internet as a means to connect your versions of Sonic Pi. I think that's a really important thing. Like, this happens all the time. If people are playing Fortnite, they're not playing on their own. They're playing with people all over the world. And so the same should be true with Sonic Pi. So that's a really interesting thing. And I've already got some designs and initial experiments of that working. And then the second thing really is about trying my best to find ways to engage with existing musicians and to get them to work with Sonic Pi as a way to try showcase what's possible, what people can do, and just to try and find ways to frame Sonic Pi not necessarily as just a tool for learning programming, but really as a tool for expression. And I really want to see a wide variety of people doing these things and to share that with the world, really. And what I found really beautiful and inspiring in my own way is that when people talk to me about the thing that they're interested in, and they have a very precise language for that typically, it's very hard often to understand what they're saying. But if you have a shared language, then you can use that shared language to transfer knowledge really effectively. And with music, I've found that when people come and talk to me about Indian ragas, or about Turkish scales, or about opera, or about classical music, or about techno, you know, if they have a little bit of understanding about Sonic Pi, we can use the code as a language to transfer musical ideas across really effectively. And to me, that's a really beautiful thing. And so we already have had people from Finland drive a bus to Africa and taught 2,000 African women how to code music with Sonic Pi. And I would really love to see those individuals who now have some more deeper understanding of Sonic Pi use Sonic Pi as a medium of the language of Sonic Pi to share their cultural and musical thoughts with the people in England, or the people in Germany, or the people in Denmark, or the people in India, sharing people with ideas from people in China. And the fact, there's actually a ton of people in Japan using Sonic Pi already. So it's really interesting to see what kinds of things they're doing and take their cultural ideas. And so to me, it's about using Sonic Pi as a medium to share ideas across cultures.
I have one final question now. What is actually your favorite music style?
Personally, that's a very good question. I think probably right now it's turned into techno. Maybe because techno is a really easy thing to code because it's just loops. And so I decided to start listening to a lot so I could understand what the professionals are doing to try and find a way to get towards that. And it's turned out to be quite an interesting space. Although it seems very derivative and simple, actually there's a lot of depth in it, in the sort of in the interstitial places between things. So not necessarily just straight like bang bang bang, but with a beat, but with some very interesting movement of the timbres and the melodies and the rhythms. I find deeply interesting, and trying to emulate that and use the tools that Sonic Pi has, which no other I'm talking about sort of these production tools that modern musicians and techno producers use. Sonic Pi has some really interesting techniques that they don't have, things like deterministic randomization, and using those to play in that space, I think is really exciting to me personally.
So Sam, thank you so much for this interview. It's been really amazing to listen to that. Thanks so much. All the best for the future.
Welcome.
And we will definitely tune into your live streams.
Thanks. And can I just say to anyone listening that please do have a play with it. And if you've got any questions, please let me know. And a great place to ask those questions is our forums called In Thread. You can see a link to that on the Sonic Pi website. And that's a really friendly place to come and ask any questions. And that's full of educators. It's full of musicians and artists and computer scientists and anyone really who's interested in using Sonic Pi to express themselves. So please come along and join the community.
Sonic Pi is an awesome combination of coding and music. It's a must to check this out. Now head over to kidslab.dev to check out the show notes with all the links of this episode. And of course, don't forget to subscribe now if you don't want to miss a future one. In the upcoming episode, we'll talk to Dale Lane about machine learning for kids. We'll discuss how kids can train and run machine learning models easily with Dale's extension to Scratch.